From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, science advisor Bob Zimmerman joins us with some compelling space stories. And before we get going into the program, I'd like you to say a prayer for our producer, Tom Danheiser. What you did not know last night during the program, Tom was not feeling very well. He came down with a pulmonary embolism. Unbelievable. We urged him to go to emergency, and he is still in the hospital, folks. He has a clot in his lung. They're trying to treat him with drugs, but do give him that prayer, and I hope he gets out of there soon. Tommy, we miss you. Well, turmoil returned to Wall Street on Tuesday after a brief rest, with renewed concerns about China's economy pushing major indexes down again. The Dow dropped 469 points. Hey, folks, we are in September. Remember the Shemitah? Jonathan Cain telling us that something big is going to happen in September. So many other people saying it too, so stand by. As authorities pressed for the hunt for three armed and dangerous suspects in the shooting of a Fox Lake, Illinois police officer, officials identified the victim as a 30-year-old veteran of the force and the father of four sons. Following the shooting death of the officer Tuesday morning, the community an hour north of Chicago on lockdown, the officer radioed in, telling dispatchers that he was chasing three men on foot, but communication was lost shortly thereafter. We're going to check in now with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, these police shootings seem to be happening more and more. What's happening? What's your take on this?
Thanks for getting back to me. The problem is that there's a national movement right now. We've been witnessing since the Trayvon Martin killing in 2012 a backlash, basically. And there's been rioting in various cities over white, primarily law enforcement, white on black crime. And there's been this spate of high profile shootings. And I think the data does not pan out that there's more killings of law enforcement personnel this year than last year. But what is happening is there's an acute awareness right now with a national movement that's raising the issue of, Black Lives Matter. And I think it, creates this impression to people that somehow there's this national movement. And I think that when you have disgruntled folks that are out there who are, living on the fringe and they have access to weapons, it's very easy for these kind of incidents to take place.
These people are going to get caught, John. Don't they think of the ramifications?
I don't think so. I think that a lot of these folks, they're desperate and they get into situations where, they engage in a murder and they know eventually that they'll be gunned down or they'll be caught. Unlikely that they'll be gotten alive. But I think the impression that people have around the country that somehow this is a far higher level of police killings this year than last year is not borne out in the data, which shows that last year, I believe that there were about 133 across the country of police killings. And this year, at this stage, early September, there's been 83.
All right. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And of course, Howard Bloom, the author of The Genius of the Beast, The Lucifer Principle. Howard, I want to ask you this, too. What is happening to the mindset of people where they just seem to freely just say, I'm going to kill a police officer?
Well, John has got it right. First of all, the percentage of police shootings this year is down 13% from last year. But the most important thing is that it's down 50% from the 1970s, and it's been consistently down 50%. But then there comes a whole gamut of motivations. One police officer, Ron Hart, an officer at Ithaca College, says that we often encounter people during a bad time in their lives. And he's got that right. We don't know what happened with Joseph Glinovich. He's the 30-year veteran that was shot this morning in a marshy territory in Fox Lake, north of Chicago. But over the last week in Louisiana, an officer named Henry Nelson was called to a domestic incident, walked into the house, and was shot with his own firearm by a guy who stabbed three women. So he was stabbed by somebody who didn't have an ideological motivation, but who was obviously going through a very difficult time. A Shreveport officer was called to a house because there was an armed man threatening somebody inside. He was killed. There is another man, we don't know the circumstances, Sergeant William Kennard in Texas. He was killed after pumping gas.
Yeah, 14 shots in there.
Right, exactly. And we don't know what's going on with him. In Baltimore, the county police chief, Jim Johnson, says that some of this comes from the sheer volume of guns in the streets. Some of it comes from people who commit violent crimes and don't want to be arrested. That's the three guys that Glinovich was chasing in Fox Lake this morning, who ended up stripping him of his guns and equipment and still are unfound. And then there are groups that are opposed to the government. Well, the perfect example of somebody opposed to the government and somebody who actually was motivated by the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement,
right,
was Ismail Abdullah Brinsley, who you remember in December, shot his girlfriend in Baltimore, got on a bus, came to New York City, went to Bedford-Stuyvesant, and shot two policemen in totally cold blood, shot them dead instantly. Now, here's a guy who had tried to commit suicide in 2013. He'd been in jail. When he was in jail, he was a member of the Black Guerrilla Family, which espouses a violent overthrow of the government. So they're all about revolution and killing what they would call the pigs. In addition, on his Facebook page, he had a very significant page of the Quran. Remember, he has an Islamic name, and apparently he was Muslim. And it's called Al-Anfal. It's from the eighth surah of the Quran, the Spoils of War. And it says, "Against them make ready your strength to the utmost, your power, including steeds of war, to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies, of Allah and your enemies." In other words, here was a mentally disturbed man in some sort of personal crisis who pulled together the revolutionary ideas of the Black Guerrilla Family along with the violent ideas of jihadist Islam, put them all together, ended up killing two guys, and did it because he was mentally disturbed and he was trying to commit suicide by police.
There's a lot of whacked out people there, Howard. I would like to know the statistics of whether these people who have committed these murders of police officers have these guns legally or not.
It's a very good question, because if you put guns together with mental instability, you can get, you get what you got in Colorado. Mass shootings.
Absolutely. Howard, thank you so much. We're going to keep our eyes on this series of incredible stories that have been happening just way too often lately. Second Amendment groups, by the way, are accusing the gun control lobby of putting law-abiding owners of firearms in danger by urging people to call the police on anyone carrying a gun in public. As more states relax rules about open carrying of guns, a coalition to stop gun violence has taken to social media to urge the public to assume gun toters are trouble and to call the cops on anyone they feel may be a threat. An outbreak of Legionnaires' disease has left four people dead, among 29 sickened, at now an Illinois veterans home at Quincy, Illinois. This happens all over the country. In New York, by the way, 12 people were killed, 128 sickened. They trace this to the historic Opera House Hotel somewhere in the air conditioning system. The current El Nino weather phenomenon could be one of the strongest on record. The event occurs when the waters of the Pacific become exceptionally warm and distort weather patterns around the world. So look out for that. Big surf began to pick up around Hilo, Hawaii on the Big Island, weakening though, but 20 feet tall hurricane pushing the waves, 20 feet tall. That's huge. Listen to this. A pregnant woman is planning on having a dolphin-assisted water birth in the ocean, despite experts warning of the possible dangers, like sharks swimming around. You can have a little baby in the ocean and then a shark will be there. Not smart. The spiritual healer and her partner are appearing in a documentary called Extraordinary Births, to chronicle the woman's journey of giving birth in the sea with a dolphin as a midwife. The experts say the plan poses the risk of other local marine life, like they say a great white shark showing up in the water. A story we're highlighting at coasttocoastam.com. The corpse of a mysterious skull was found by two residents in Russia. It is said by the locals that it could have been a mutant chicken embryo, but they're saying now, we don't know what this thing is. We don't know if it is fish or fowl or what the creature might be. It has no neck, it has no wings, but we have the picture at coasttocoastam.com. And in 1859, right around this date, Richard Carrington spotted a huge coronal mass ejection, an X-flare, the largest ever recorded, the Carrington event. If we have one of those today, our power grid goes out. Let's check in with our friend, the astronomer, Stephen Cates. Hard to believe, 1859, we had that happen, Stephen.
Amazing, George. Good to be with you. And what a month September's shaping up to be. But as you correctly report, the Carrington event, and even back then, George, before the advent of all the great electronics we have, it was reported and very accurately documented that actual telegraph lines became totally ablaze with fire.
Yeah, they were cooked.
Incredible, just so powerful. But right now, George, if people look directly toward the sun, not with the naked eye, the sun is just the diametric opposite. We're seeing a pretty much spotless sun at this point in time, but obviously that seems to be only temporary as the sun continues to pump out energy. But a quick wrap-up of some of the things,
sure.
As we say, happy September to everybody out there. Here's what we can expect in our skies. As you report, and so many interesting guests that we hear on Coast, so many things people should be looking for politically, financially, spiritually, and of course, astronomically. We have to center on the big blood moon that's coming up, George, on the 27th of September, a major event for astronomers and for those in the spiritual realm. It has a lot of course, kinetic effect. But something I found strange here, they're talking about oddities in the month of September. On September the 23rd, right after the astronomical equinox, we have the 266th Pope Francis, meeting with President Obama, strangely, on the 266th day of the year. And some say, get ready for something big being birthed, like that of a human gestation cycle. But finally, to wrap it up, for the closer-to-home stuff, look in the west after sunset, planet Mercury visible this week, 20 degrees high. And then, George, all the strangeness continues. A great planetary alignment. Venus, the bright star Regulus, Mars, and Jupiter on the 21st of September, all just days ahead of the great lunar eclipse. Wow, what a month September is.
Exciting stuff, Stephen. Thank you so much. Looking forward to all of that. The venom of a wasp native to Brazil could be used as a weapon to fight cancer, according to scientists. A toxin in the sting kills cancer cells without harming normal cells, according to lab studies. Up next, by the way, Dr. Bill Miller joins us. His book is called The Microcosm Within. We are going to be talking about microbial life. It controls us. You have no idea. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Bill Miller has been a physician in academic and private practice for more than 30 years. Now, during this time period, there have been spectacular advances, of course, in biology, medicine, genetics, microbiology. He's written a book called The Microcosm Within, and we're going to talk with him just about all kinds of things that are happening on this planet that we have to fight in battle just to stay healthy every day. Dr. Bill Miller on Coast to Coast. Hello there, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, George. I'm thrilled to be on the show.
This is I'm looking forward to. And, you know, if we had eyes like microscopes, I don't think we'd like what we see crawling all over the place, would we?
We would be beyond astonished. Our actual narrative is the unseen world. I know it's really tough for people to imagine this, but, you know, George, when you look in the mirror, or when I look in the mirror, I see Bill Miller. I see myself as one person. I assume that's the way it must be. I think that my cells, the cells that I see when I'm looking at myself in the mirror, that's got to be what really counts. What science is teaching us is that those cells do count, but they are actually outnumbered. They're outnumbered by 10 to 1 by microbial life that lives in us, on us, with us. There's so much part of us that we almost live in an illusion of being a singularity, but we really are a vast constellation of life all put together so seamlessly that it fools us into thinking that we're just by ourselves. It's a new finding, and the depth and the interrelationships between microbes and not just man, every single creature that we can see is beginning to be unraveled, and it's astonishing.
Bill, when we go to sleep, there are little critters probably all over the place in our
everywhere.
Bed. In our bed. So
absolutely. I was writing an article, and the title of it is, they've got us surrounded.
Oh, my
and
God.
Georgia, they really do. They're everywhere.
We're never going to sleep again. You know that.
No, but it's good news, actually, because we are learning that we can't do without them. They can't be what they want to be without us.
Oh, tell me the truth, though. We're sleeping. We're on our heads are on the pillow. Are there little critters going in and out of our mouths and our noses and things? Come on, be honest.
You don't really want to know.
I have to know this answer. I have to know.
Don't think of it that way. Think of it as companionship.
I don't want them as companions.
You know, no one's going to be able to sleep tonight.
Well, yeah, but it's true, isn't it?
It is true. It is. It's everywhere. It's every part of us. It's every orifice, every pore. But it's not bad news. It's just different news. It is a new way of understanding what it's like to be a human being, what it's like for us to have a relationship with every other creature, because they're all the same way that we are. They're all the same form of this constellation of life that's knitted together as we have it. And the good news is it's going to have a terrific payoff for medical practice going forward. We're learning so much about how this life participates in our own health and regulating our neural system, our immunological system. And all of these discoveries are going to have a big payoff over time.
I had a story yesterday, sad story, 14-year-old little boy.
Amoeba.
Yeah, the amoeba, the brain-eating amoeba, which goes through the nose, the nostrils.
I know, but it's so rare. I know, it's like talking to people about shark attacks. You know the statistics. The chance of you being bitten by a shark is way lower than being struck by lightning.
True.
But it just hits our brain, our minds differently. That poor fellow, 14 years old, I mean, it's beyond tragic. But it's so rare.
I mean, you jump in a lake, the kid's splashing around, having a good time, and water, you know, hits him in the nose, and he dies.
I know.
Why can't the body fight that, Doc?
Well, the body is fighting in a vast army of microbes that want to try to do the same thing. Why that young fella was... he was not the only kid in the swimming hole. Why he had an immunological deficiency of the sort that would let this particular bacteria take hold, this particular microbe, not bacteria, but microbe take hold, is unclear. But these things happen, and it's tragic, but it is just part of the vast overlap of microbial life with ourselves, and we can't do without it. You can't be George without the microbes that are part of you.
Well, you know, we do know, for example, that there's good bacteria, bad bacteria in your gut, and you need that. You need the good stuff in order to function.
Well, here's what we're learning. We used to think that the human body was sterile, and we've learned that that's absolutely and completely wrong. Now, it turns out in the gut, there may be 100 trillion microbes. And these microbes are absolutely essential for your well-being. If all of those disappeared, you would not be able to survive. So we could take out your spleen, an important organ,
right,
and you're going to do pretty well. But if we took out each and every one of the microbes in your gut,
your history,
you would be unable to flourish. You would not be able to live very long because your immune system would break down. Your ability, your system of neurotransmitters would be seriously affected. Your whole entire metabolism would break down, your glucose regulation. All of these things are intimately related with your health, and we are only beginning to learn about exactly how deeply intertwined this all is.
Hold on, Dr. Bill Miller with us as we talk about the microcosm within. Just amazing. Wait till we get into some of these other things. Wow. I mean, I've seen people, they won't touch an escalator with their hands because they're afraid of germs. Well, we got our first dating success story for ParanormalDate.com. Really exciting. There's good and bad news, though. The good news is, she said, I think I have found the love of my life through ParanormalDate.com. That's the good news. The bad news is, she said, he's insisting that I jump off the site immediately. Well, I guess that's going to happen. That's going to happen. It's a success story. But for those of you just wanting to look and meet, go to ParanormalDate.com. We are working on apps, by the way. The apps are coming. We're finalizing a project, the bid with a couple suppliers, and we're going to get them for the iPhone and the Android, and we want to roll them out together when it happens. So it's an app world now, my friends, and I think that'll help even more. But go and sign up. It's free at ParanormalDate.com. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Bill Miller with us. We'll take calls with the doc next hour, by the way. Bill, I've got a friend of mine, dear friend. She refuses to touch her hands on an escalator rail. So as she goes up it, or if she goes down it, she wraps her sweater around her hands so she can brace herself, but she will not touch it with her hands. Now, is that being a little too silly? I mean, are these germs that bad?
The germs, in general, it's useless. You know, it's kind of cute in a way, sort of sweet. I understand how people feel, but they get you coming or going. There's no way that you can avoid the germs that she's trying to avoid. And one of the things that's true, there are many bad bugs out there, and all of us have been sick. All of us are worried about flu and other things.
Yeah.
There's no question that they're bad bugs. But most of the bugs we come into contact with are good, and we need them, and we need to be in touch with them. You know, George, there's a thing called the hygiene hypothesis. This is something that's relatively new, but it's been kicking around for a while. What's been noticed by pediatricians in particular is that the incidence of childhood asthma and allergy is rising rapidly. And it's been mysterious. People don't understand, had not had a theory. They didn't really have a good reason why this was happening. And the current belief is that we live in a way that's increasingly disconnected with all of the microbes that we need to come in contact with at the age in which we need to be in contact with them. You know, this sounds a bit counterintuitive, but you really need to be in touch with bugs all the time. When, you know, back in the last century, I mean, I'm talking about the latter part of the 19th century, early 20th century, kids rolled in the dirt. There wasn't the same kind of cleanliness that we have now. People slept in beds, multiple people in the same beds. They slept with animals all around them, farming communities. It was a completely different way of life. We're not sanitized, but we're much less in contact with this microbial sphere, the variety within that microbial sphere than we had ever been before. And in consequence, researchers are beginning to believe that children are not coming up with the proper microbes in the proper sequence, and that's leading to this unexpected effect where they have asthma and allergies.
Mm-hmm. And they are. I want to talk with you about vaccines too, Bill. I don't take the vaccines anymore. I did when I was a kid, but I don't take a flu shot. I don't think I can remember when I had the flu, knock on wood. But I do not tell people to take the vaccine or not to. It's none of my business. It's up to them. Most of the guests that I've had do not like vaccines. Most of the medical people that come on or alternative practitioners. What's your take on some of these vaccinations?
Well, George, that's why you have me on. You've got to always have the other point of view.
Yep.
I am a huge believer in vaccines, and I'll tell you expressly why. First of all, I'm a scientist. and the data, which is what I care about most. Not anecdote. I understand everyone's got has a story, and I'm not trying to discount how people feel.
I understand.
I respect them, but the data is really what matters, and the data is absolutely clear. Let's not be mistaken. Vaccines are one of the greatest advances in all human history. There are very few things that could possibly fire, maybe could be mentioned as something else, agriculture. I mean, vaccination has saved hundreds of millions of lives. It's the scourges which vaccines are meant to protect from are the very worst bugs that you can get. These pathogens are deadly, and they killed hundreds of maybe a billion or more people over time. So vaccines are absolutely essential, and the evidence against them is not only weak, it's essentially non-existent. For example, the link to autism, which we hear about often.
We do.
And many people believe deeply and passionately about this. But George, that all emanated from a single paper in a very respected British journal called The Lancet. This is the top-of-the-line British journal, like the New England Journal
of
Medicine.
It's the creme de la creme.
Right? You betcha. And it was a researcher published a very convincing paper that showed a linkage between one of the stabilizers in that vaccine and autism, a purported link. Well, as it turns out, that researcher was a fraud and had completely made up the data, and the Lancet retracted that paper. So at the moment, there is no actual paper that exists that says vaccines are dangerous in and of themselves. Now, that's not to say that there can't be bad reactions to a vaccine.
Right.
I don't want anyone to misunderstand.
I mean, some people, for example, Bill, say they wish the mumps, measles, rubella shot that combines all three would be single shots.
Well, I really don't feel as though I'm the person to comment on that particular aspect of it.
Okay.
And I do want to make it clear that vaccines, I strongly support them, but that doesn't mean that they never, ever, ever have a bad effect.
Or again, reactions.
It's just like wearing a seatbelt. You can be in the car and you can do fine, but you'd be much better to wear the seatbelt, and you're far safer if something bad happens. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with vaccination. And I strongly urge anyone who's on the fence about being vaccinated that they reconsider. There are some people that can't be vaccinated because some of them are egg-based and so on, and some people have egg allergies. But all of these things can be discussed with your physician, and I would urge those people who are willing to be receptive to my comments to really seriously consider getting vaccines. Now, let's talk about flu for a second.
Sure.
Because that's the one that an adult is most commonly going to experience right now, because most of us have had our childhood.
Right. And they seem to have a difficulty keeping up with the flu virus that pops out.
That's right. And the same thing holds for kids with measles, but let's just talk about the flu. Getting a flu vaccination is useful, highly useful. In general, it lowers your odds of getting the flu by about 50% or more. It isn't perfect because the flu strain that they vaccinate you against doesn't have to be the major culprit as the season progresses. And there can be mutations, so that the specific flu virus can be different or can have mutated away from what it was when you were vaccinated. But in general, it's highly effective. Secondly, it's a community service, because when you're dealing with illnesses like the flu, and it's also the same thing with measles, once this takes hold in a population, then you become a spreader. If you haven't gotten a vaccine and you haven't protected yourself that way, and you do get sick, now you're a spreader. Now you are, this happened with measles. Kids got sick because they went to Disneyland. Some kid that had not been vaccinated came with the measles and spread it. And the measles is a deadly disease. You know,
my God, yeah.
We think it's like nothing now. It's people forget. Measles is a horrible scourge. So vaccines are really important for you And vaccines are very important for the people whom you love, because by being vaccinated, you contribute to herd immunity.
Here's a question about vaccines, then I want to move into some other areas here, Bill. But those proponents of vaccines get upset when those who don't want them or feel morally obligated not to get them don't want them. My question is if those who have been vaccinated are upset, why do they care? Because if they've been vaccinated, they're not supposed to get whatever disease is out there.
Well, it's a very good question. And the ones that I've heard, and you know, I believe in people having the right to make a decision about their own medical care. If, you know, I think that imposing vaccinations is a difficult topic, but should be discussed with respect to schools. I mean, people can choose to not be vaccinated and not go to the public schools. I mean, there are a range of choices that people can make. But in general, what I've heard about those people that get very upset about the lack of vaccination is that they happen to have a child that cannot be vaccinated because of underlying allergy or immunosuppression. There are children that have childhood leukemias and cancers. They are not able to get vaccinated in the routine manner, and they then become susceptible to a pathogen that spreads the community because others have not been vaccinated. As I said, the concept of herd immunity, that we all are cooperative in giving that pathogen the least opportunity to gain a foothold in the population.
So here we are with all these little critters that are out there, and we have people's obsessions. So do we even need to wash our hands?
That's a very good question. Yes, hand washing is still one of the few ways we have to directly participate in our own good health. But I will add, it doesn't do as much as we thought it did. They did a couple of really good studies about the effectiveness of hand washing in the transmission of disease. And the disturbing thing, George, is that the studies show that in order to be really effective, you have to wash your hands in a way that I don't know anybody does that. It's basically about 20 full seconds of scrubbing with an antiseptic soap. Well, who in the world does that? I don't know anyone who stands over a sink and rubs his hand for 20 full seconds. Do you?
No.
I've never seen anyone.
Maybe Howard Hughes did.
Well, we used to. The only times in my life that I've ever done that, and I'm a very clean person, is a surgical scrub. is a lengthy, careful procedure, which is a lot longer than 20 seconds. But that's an exclusive subset of hand cleansing that relates to a particular environment. But in the general run-of-the-mill circumstance, I mean, any male or female can just go in a bathroom and observe casually what the rate of compliance with that would be if people even knew about it, and it would still be almost close to zero. So hand washing is important, but it I'll tell you where it is important. And people ask me, well, what can we do if someone is sick in our home? What do you do? Well, in that circumstance, the best thing, and I'm not saying that this is the most practical thing, but what I'm talking about is the optimal thing.
Mm-hmm.
The sick child or adult stays in their room, and a single caregiver goes in and out, delivers, you know, food and does comfort and so on, and washes their hands scrupulously every time they've interacted with that person. And that's the best way to try to keep the rest of the family healthy.
Is it smart for parents to keep their kids as germ-free as they can, or should they get out there, build up a resistance, and go for it?
Out there, build up a resistance, and go for it. There's no way you can prevent your child from getting associated with the microbial diversity mm-hmm. that's out there, nor do you want to. Here, let me tell you something. I was just visiting my niece. Has a two-year-old and a two-month-old. And I saw something that at first sent a chill up my spine, and then as I thought about it, it made perfect sense. So she's got a two-month-old, and the kid's fussy and needs a diaper change or something, and so she takes the pacifier and puts it in her mouth.
In her mouth?
He puts it in her mouth as like a third hand.
Okay.
In order to go ahead and do what else she needs
right.
to do. And I must tell you, as in training as a doctor, a frontline physician for decades, my first look, and I've written a book about microbes. The first moment I saw that,
you're freaking
I was about
out.
To scream. What are you doing? And I thought, oh, that's not harmful. I mean, it's taken me a time to get used to the understanding that it won't make a bit of difference. And the microbes that are going to be transferred from her to the child are almost certainly ones that the child needs anyway. And the child is going to get them by crawling and eventually and other things down the line. So it's a lot of fuss, but it won't make a bit of difference.
What do you think of these alcohol gels to clean your hands?
That's a terrific question. This is a very interesting question because they're always offered as the alternative and as even better than hand washing. And the data on that is very mixed. So, for example, you know cruise ships.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many of your listeners have been on a cruise, but I understand that there's been a big problem with a virus called the norovirus.
Yes, everywhere on these cruises. Yeah, why cruises?
Honestly, I just think that it gets into the water supply somehow.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's contained in it isn't being flushed regularly, and it's a closed container. Obviously, it's got to be
right. Splashing around in there.
Somehow or other, it becomes a breeding ground for this particular virus. Must love that climate, or it may be in the ductal system from condensation. And so the end result is, a lot of these cruise ships have taken to putting stands of hand sanitizers out along the stairways and things, I understand. And I know from friends that they're telling me they're always popping the hand sanitizer on them. Well, the interesting thing is a study was done on that. And hand sanitizers are effective against certain bacteria and viruses and things like that. Unfortunately, for norovirus, the data seems to be that it spreads it.
It spreads it?
It actually spreads it. So I bring this up just to say that we're learning new things about our interaction with the microbial world, and our attitudes are shifting, and they're changing, and we don't know the answers. Everything's kind of preliminary right now, but in a direction of letting us know that these are an essential part of our good health, and we shouldn't fear them. We need to learn how to artfully coexist with them.
Bill, what's going on with this Legionnaire's disease? Why is it so fatal percentage-wise?
Well, the thing with certain pathogens is that they have found, and this is their means of finding their best habitation. You know, microbes are not stupid. And I know people don't think it's conceivable that microbes have an intelligence. This is a very tough concept for people. It's even tough for physicians to understand. We think of microbes as just completely passive. They don't have any particular sensibilities of any kind. But that is not true. They have their own form of cognition. They don't think like we do. I'm not trying to anywhere, in any way, shape, or form say that. But they have discrimination, and they have preferences. And that's why disease patterns are very reliable. That's why certain bugs cause pneumonia and other bugs cause meningitis. Two different places in the body, and they're two different habitats for microbes. Legionnaires love the lung. That's where they love to breed. And so when they find it, they link together. They form colonies of cooperative association because, again, they're not completely passive. They make decisions that this is a preferential environment, and they just go to town on you. They are one of those few organisms that are true deadly pathogens.
Bill, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this incredible work you've done, the microcosm within. And we're going to take phone calls, and I'd like for you to share your stories about germs, quite frankly. Something strange. Share that with us next.